Welcome to the Gold Standard Game 1 Reaction and Game 2 Preview Edition here on the 440 Sports Network. Of course, on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter live. Our second ever live episode. My name is Braden Gall. That is Emma Lingen and Michael Gallagher, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, how are we doing? What's going on? Are you rested?
No.
I'm sleepy.
I am also sleepy. It's a funny thing, no matter what time the Preds games start, my daughters wake up at the same damn time the next morning. It does not matter. They are awake at 6:15. So, look, really, really good game in game one. We've got a lot of stuff to get to. If you guys want to go ahead and jump into the comment section, if you want to share the show, give us a little thumbs up on YouTube, retweet on Twitter.com. I will still call it that until I die or until it dies. So if you want to get involved or ask questions, we have some time for you guys. Obviously, we're going to get to the one big takeaway from game number one. Sort of a come-from-behind win for Vancouver in the third period. Pretty tough, pretty brutal way to lose game one. So we'll get into that. Obviously, style of play, rest versus rhythm, a thing we talked about last week on the show. UC Saros, any questions about him? Lineup changes for game two, we'll look ahead. And maybe some of the guys, the players that played pretty well. Also, if you're watching, I did my part, guys. I shaved for the first time in like 5 years. My wife has not seen, my children have never seen my face, I don't think. But I tried, folks, and I guess maybe it won't, the beard won't be as long this year as I thought. So one big thing, let's start there, folks. One big thing from game one, we'll start with you, Michael. What was your number one big takeaway from game number one's loss, 3-2 in Vancouver?
I think just kind of falling back into old habits. I mean, we talked about the power play, how it was, we praised it last time, talking about how good it was down the stretch, 1-for-4 last night. And I think also, too, just the third period woes just kind of came back to haunt them. We saw, and I mentioned this last week, and I hate that I was proven right, but I felt like this was eerily similar to the Boston game at the beginning of April. You're tied going into the third period. You get to the middle of the third period. Boston starts to swing momentum its way. They score a goal. They're up 1-0. You're like, okay, this isn't bad. Like, there's still some time left. They give up 2 quick goals within a minute span. Same thing happened last night. You give up those 2 goals within a 12-second span, and the Predators just couldn't get out of their own way. I think falling back into those old habits, and we spent the last week or so praising this team about how it's not the same team that they played Vancouver last time. It's they've made miles and miles of improvement since that December 19th regular season game, the last time they played. And then they go out and they play exactly like they did the first, 20 so games of the regular season. So just falling back into those old habits. You could talk about how much the team has improved, but if they don't learn from those mistakes, then they really haven't improved, I guess.
Well, you took mine. That's very similar. Very similar to what I was going to say. I mean, I think more specifically about the third period and how many times earlier in the year this team had a lead and lost it or couldn't hang on to it. And that, we saw that. But, again, it's, I don't know if this is a good thing or bad thing, but I mean, Andrew Brunette said it afterwards. We haven't done that in a really long time. So I guess I would say, I don't know, I'm not ready to just like doom the entire series yet. I just think that even though I still don't think Nashville will win the series, but I think that it's like, it's one game. It is very uncharacteristic, at least for how this team has played of late. I think there were a couple things, like other things to add in there. Like Philip Forsberg was invisible last night. Yep. Roman Josi was just completely neutralized. And I mean, again, it's one game. I tend not to overreact too much to one game, but yeah, I think the not being able to hang on to a lead is something that we saw earlier in the year, and we saw it again last night, and it was a little concerning.
That was just the second time since the All-Star break that the Predators have lost a game when leading to start the third period too.
Ooh, brutal. And to have a lead on the road against basically the best first period team in all of the NHL, to have a lead going into the second period and then to give it up the way they did. So I'll get to my one big thing here, because it kind of combines a lot of the things we're going to talk about today. We're not going to do super long episodes as we react to each game. And of course, I want to make sure we promote all the other great stuff you guys are doing. Of course, Nashville Hockey Now for Michael, you can catch his work there. The Hockey News for Emma, you can also catch Emma over on It's All Your Fault with Jeremy K. Gover. I'm curious to see his demeanor on this episode after game one, of course, from the scene and the post. Make sure you check out all that other great stuff. So my one big takeaway is sort of like the mental toughness it is going to require to overcome what happened on Sunday night. And that is sort of a combination of everything. I feel like you maybe didn't play your best game, but you played pretty well. You got out to a first period lead. I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say about the style of the game, but I thought the style of the game is sort of what you want against Vancouver on the road. I think the Predators did a pretty good job of dictating the style. I think the last 15 minutes of the game is when Vancouver dictated the style and they did whatever they want. And there was no space in the neutral zone. They couldn't enter the zone on a power play. So there was the first half of the game, it was the Predators doing what they wanted to do. And to play like that after so much rest, to come back and have an opportunity to win game one and steal the first game, that's and then to lose it the way you did with total mental breakdowns. And I would blame UC Saros on the first goal, maybe to some degree. That's the one I think he probably should have had. And then the other two are just total, to both of your points, just complete breakdowns of almost like just focus and effort on just mark your guy, especially on the third goal. But that's my issue, is sort of like, where's this team going to be mentally now for the next 48 hours? Are we going to see the veteran leadership of McDonough and, yes, Luke Shen and Ryan O'Reilly and Nyquist and Forsberg and Yossi and the guys that have been here and know exactly, like you're saying, it's not doom and gloom after one game? Or is it a bunch of young players who are like, man, we've never been here before. We just tried our best. And even though that wasn't their best game, and it's just gut-wrenching. It's gut-wrenching to lose like that in the third period with back-to-back goals in 12 seconds. And I'm just curious where they are mentally. That's my big takeaway, is what happens between the ears over the next 36 hours.
Well, I mean, this is why Barry Trotz went out and signed Nyquist and O'Reilly and Shen, right? He said he wanted serial winners and guys that have been here, done that. And I think this is the moment that you rely on those guys. And if you watch some of the clips from the media availability up in Vancouver, a lot of the players were kind of playing down this whole like, oh, well, playoff experience doesn't really matter. Hockey's hockey. Once you get out there, all that stuff. I'm not buying that. You need guys that have been here before. You have three guys that have won a cup. You have guys that have multiple. I think I wrote about it on Nashville Hockey Now, just the difference in playoff experience. I think the Predators have 10 players with 40 or more games of playoff experience, where Vancouver only has four. I mean, the Predators have 800 combined games of playoff experience. Vancouver's around 400 and something. Like, it's drastically different. These are the moments you need to rely on that experience and those guys. And you have guys internally, too, like Yossi and Saros and Sissons and Forsberg, who were here during that cup run. So this is the moment where I think Barry Trotz went out and got those guys. And you also have the guys on the roster that have been here before to pick up a Luke Shen or Tommy Novak. I mean, Tommy Novak had a really bad game last night. Like, those are some of the things that you need someone to put an arm around that guy and be like, look, last night wasn't your best, but you move forward. And I think to your point, Braden, like, we are going to see the mental toughness of this team, because this is what they preached all season long. We want to be tough to play against. We want to be the team that rebounds and responds correctly. Like, this is, we're going to see if they can actually do that.
Yeah. I think the way you have to look at it, if you're that team, is, you know what, we played 2.5 periods of solid, well-organized hockey. And yes, obviously it didn't turn out the way that we wanted to. Like, basically came unraveled in 12 seconds, but you can't focus on that. I mean, it's cliche, but you have to focus on everything that they had done right. And I think, you know, going back to the media availabilities before the game, Roman Yossi said it. I think a couple other guys mentioned it too, that with playoff games, especially on the road, it's like really important. You have to start on the right foot and get out to a fast start, a hot start. And those like first 10 minutes are going to be crucial. And I mean, they did that, but then it's like they remembered how to start, but then they forgot how to finish. So I think that also, I mean, maybe this is oversimplifying it too much, but I really would look at the fact that they haven't played a game in a week prior to last night. And I think that talking about, you know, what Brunette said about, we haven't done that a long time. And to Mike's point about how they only once since the All-Star break that they had lost a lead after the third period, I think that just really points to, you know, you're out of practice, you're out of a rhythm. Yep. And I just think that, you know, technically they were sound, they were fine. It was just, I think that once you get back into that rhythm and back into how you were playing before you had that week long break, I would look at that overall as like the overall body of work.
I, So the rest versus rust, rest versus rhythm thing, I think you only know the answer until that, till after the game. I don't think you can predict that at all, because if they get rested and they come out super fresh and super hot, then it was a beneficial situation. I think it hurt them. I think it clearly hurt them that Vancouver had been playing to try to win a one seed up until the last kind of possible minute, and that they clearly, with a lot of youth, although Vancouver far more inexperienced team in the postseason, I think you could tell like they were both wanting to play the same way, but Vancouver, they felt prepared and sort of calm with how the Predators wanted to push them tempo wise. They felt like they could handle it. They felt like they were comfortable in that style. And to me, that's sort of like, all right, they've been playing pretty important games because they're trying to get a one seed or whatever. I think that was clearly hurtful to the Predators, even though they took they won the first period and got the goal. So I'm curious about the style of play. It sounds like you guys both agree on the rest versus rust thing, that the rest hurt this team. What about the style of the game? I mean, very low shot count for most of the game. I think the Predators were more physical for a big chunk of that time. They kind of slowed the game down, but they clearly wanted to play a slightly different way than Vancouver. How do we feel that is that the right approach against this team? Because I thought Vancouver, even though they were trailing deep into the third, was fairly comfortable in the style that they were playing.
I think what I saw is Vancouver and Nashville play a similar system, and right now Vancouver just plays a little bit better. Vancouver is better at controlling the puck, dictating the pace, slowing things down on their terms. Nashville tries to do that, but it's almost like a big brother, little brother situation where Vancouver just does everything a little bit better than Nashville does. And if you want to be a playoff team and you want to go in and advance in playoff series and be taken seriously, like that, you have to do to Vancouver what Vancouver did to you last night. And I don't know if they're there yet. I do think there's a little something to the rhythm versus rest thing. I think not having played a game in 6 days affected them. I'm not sure what the exact record was. It was like 13. They were basically a 500 team during the regular season when they had more than two games of rest in between each game. So it's kind of a coin toss what version of the Predators you're getting after they have more than two days of rest. So I think Vancouver just, Nashville was outgunned last night. Vancouver did everything better. They controlled the game, and usually Nashville is the team that goes in and controls the game. And we haven't really seen since it started clicking after the All-Star break, we haven't really seen how Nashville responds to the adversity when they don't get to control and dictate the terms of the game. So I think that's the big thing going forward is how do they respond? How does Andrew Brunette, does he make lineup changes? Does he try to switch things up? Is he working different power play units? Like, what is he doing to try to get it back to where Nashville is the team that is controlling all facets of the game?
Yeah, 100%. They play a very similar system. And, you know, they're both very fast, very physical. They take away space. I was looking, and I wrote about this at the Hockey News, but I was looking at NHL Edge the other day at the advanced stats. And I think Nashville and Vancouver during the regular season are two of the top five teams in the league in terms of offensive zone time. And I think Vancouver was right behind Nashville. It was like Nashville was 43.7% and Vancouver was 43. Like, they are right there. So their systems are well matched, I think. But to Mike's point, the Vancouver team is deeper. They have more talent overall. I think, and I've said this before, their stars match up well against each other, but Vancouver has more depth around their stars than Nashville does. And I think, you know, and talking about controlling the pace, dictating the pace, Nashville really didn't lose control until that third period stretch of like 12 seconds where they gave up those two goals. Like, they were in it. They did not look like they were out of control in any way for the majority of the game. It's just they lost it and couldn't get it back. And so, again, I think they're doing the right things. And when it comes to the whole, are there going to be lineup changes discussion, you know, it...
We'll get there.
Yeah, okay. All right.
We'll get there. I think that you guys are both right on kind of all of that. They just felt more comfortable. We'll get to some of the players I actually thought performed pretty well, because some guys were playing in their very first playoff games in their entire careers, and I thought if I don't take a moment to wax poetically about 77 playing a pretty damn good game in his first ever NHL Stanley Cup playoff debut, I wouldn't be, you know, I'm contractually obligated to spend a few moments talking about Luke Evangelista. I want to talk about those guys in a second, but UC Saros, I don't want to say, like, jumpy's not the right word, and I'm going to let Emma go first on this since she's our resident Saros stan. Jumpy's not the right word. He made a couple of big saves in the first period, a couple of nice gloves, say, like, but the rush to start the second period, that's normally a goal he needs to stop, I would say. And then, you know, he was screened big time on the Hughes goal, but also could have seen that one too. That one's more on the defense and letting like the best defenseman in the world, not named Roman Josi, stand wide open in the top of the slot and take a shot at you with like four dudes in front of you. And then the breakdown on the final one, not really his fault at all. That's three consecutive failures by, I want to say it was Jeremy Lauzon, Ryan O'Reilly, and then Alexander Carrier, like back to back to back, all within like 5 seconds, each one getting beat individually on a play. Where are you at on UC Saros? There's no chance you don't start him. I'm just, the whole conversation was, if he's good, you can win the series. Did you see that in game one?
Yes, I think that 100% he should have stopped that first goal. That was on him. The other two, I mean, you said he was screened pretty well. He was screened exceptionally well. He did not see that second one coming. And so I think that, you know, you have to give it to Vancouver there, but also I'm not worried. I'm not worried with how he was playing. I think that he kept his composure. Like you said, he made some really big saves early, did, you know, keep them in it. I think that those breakdowns towards the end, I mean, you mentioned guys who had good games. If we're going to talk about guys who had bad games, let's talk about Alexander Carrier for a second. He did not have a good game. And that, I mean, he had that misplay that directly led to that goal. And like, you really can't even put that on Saros or anyone else, frankly. And so I think that, yeah, I'm not concerned about Saros. I think he did what he needed to do. I think he played the way you want him to play. I was more concerned with the defensive lapses there.
Yeah. I'm not really concerned about Saros either. I do think that first goal, obviously he should have stopped that, and you feel bad for him because he got a piece of it too. If he would just have been like 2 centimeters to the right, that goal probably doesn't go in. What I saw on that was, to Emma's point, my issue is more of the defensive play in front of him than it is with what Saros was actually doing. Because I feel like I do think there was probably a little bit of nerves because that was the first time he played in a playoff game in a couple of years. And I think it's interesting to note, I think Nick Kieser tweeted out this morning, of his 11 playoff starts, he's allowed 3 goals or more in 9 of them. I don't really think that's something that they really pay attention to, but I think that's something as media and as fans that we all probably pay attention to, because
it's a talking point for sure.
Yeah, and I pointed out last week that Saros traditionally hasn't been very good in the playoffs. I think that's something that you keep an eye on too. But I think the big thing for me when it comes to Saros is, I was watching the Sportsnet post game last night, and Quinn Hughes talked about the importance of screening Saros, and then Mike Kelly tweeted out, Saros had an 863 save percentage on screenshots this season, 49th out of 54 qualified goalies. Clearly, that's something Vancouver picked up on. That's something they know. And what bothered me last night was, not only was Vancouver screening Saros quite frequently, they were quite successful at it too. If you're going to put Luke Shen out there, you need him to go in front of the net. You need him to clear some of that traffic away from UC Saros. You need some of these other guys too. So the fact that the defensemen didn't really do their job in keeping their goalie's line of sight clear, that kind of bothered me. And if that happens again in game two, then I think this series is over, because if Vancouver picked up on screening Saros is kind of the key, and this is how you find success against this guy because he is so good, they're going to keep doing it until Nashville makes them stop doing it.
Yeah. I want to make sure we frame the conversation correctly. This is not a conversation about, does he deserve to start? Like, that's not what I'm saying. This is not a conversation about that at all. You are riding and dying with UC Saros. The question is, again, like I said, to maybe make sure we reiterate the conversation, is, did we see a good enough UC Saros where this guy can steal you a game or two and win the series? And is he going to be consistent? I don't think we've got a big enough body of work on him to say that he's traditionally good or bad. He's had some really great games and some really bad ones, but it's still pretty small body of work as a starting goaltender. He's played a lot of games where he came in for Pekka a couple of times, and I'm not even sure that those kind of count like towards his numbers. But so ultimately, I it doesn't really matter. You have to start him. You're going to start him no matter what. The question is, I saw some things I liked and I saw some things that concerned me, and that's all. And so it's something to keep an eye on moving forward. Let's do some of the big stars. Josi had a couple of moments in the third period where I thought he was attempting to take over the game, you know, just diving at the net. You could tell he was getting desperate and frustrated. I think the big line was with O'Reilly and Nyquist. I thought they both played extremely well. You get the power play goal. Lots of power play possession on that one power play where they're in the in the zone for like 90 straight seconds and they don't even get like a really good shot on it. Forsberg is the concern on that group, but I expect him to bounce back. So of the stars, I think you got mostly what you needed. And so let me ask you this before I ask about young players and lineup changes. Do you think that's like what grade version of their game was that? Because if they played a C plus game and still had a goal lead on the road against a division champion in the first game, I think you can come away with that mentally going, all right, we should have had a chance. We're more motivated. It's 9 a.m.
Where's their heart?
It's, it's too late for me. If that was an A-plus version of their game, which I don't think any of us would agree it was, then you're really demoralized, right? So I'm curious. I think it was as good as they could have played coming off a week of no games. But also, I know that they're better than what they played. So what version of the Preds would you give? I mean, you guys have both said that they reverted to some old stuff. So obviously, you don't think they played their best.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know. I would be more, and even before last night's game even happened, I was thinking this, that I would rather, I'm going to judge this team more on how they play in game two than how they played in game one. Just because, I mean, maybe if they had played an exceptionally awful game in game one, that would be different. But I don't think they did. Like, again, for 2.5 periods, they were dictating and they were right there and they were leading. And so I think, like you said, I really think the rest hurt them a lot. I think we maybe saw, I don't know, you could even go period by period, but I won't do that. I just think that overall, you maybe see like, I don't know, a C plus. Maybe I give him a B minus.
I give him a B, I think.
I think I give him a B minus because I think that they did a lot of the right things, you know, and again, it should be a team effort, obviously, but I said this earlier that Forsberg just disappeared and that makes a difference. You know, if he shows up, then that maybe elevates everyone else's game too. You saw, like you said, Roman did what he could in the third period, but it was a little too late. So I'm not overly concerned. I'm going to be a much harsher judge, I think, in game two than I was in game one.
I like it.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I would give them a B minus somewhere in there just because up until halfway through the third period, like you were winning the game, even with Saros not looking completely comfortable, even with all the defensive breakdowns, even with as bad as Lozon and Carrier were playing, all the things that we've talked about, you were winning that game and you were in control up until halfway through the third period. You let the Pius Suter goal in and it's tied. And then you very quickly, you know, 12 seconds later, Joshua scores and then the wheels kind of fall off. Up until that point, everything was not going perfectly, but everything was going pretty well. If you can control your own nerves and not default to the bad mistakes you were making at the beginning of the season, the first half of the season, then I think they could have like, I watched that game last night. They very easily could have won. You're one or two plays, one or two breaks going your way from being up 1-0 instead of being down 0-1. So I would give them a B. There's definitely room for improvement and things they can do better. But it's not like you watch last night's game and you say, wow, Vancouver just drastically outplayed Nashville.
No, I do think you say that about the last 15 minutes. But that can't be the way.
But not the entire game.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So, again, that Vancouver, number one best first period team in the entire NHL, I believe 96 first period goals, number one, plus 38 goal differential, number one. This was on the ESPN broadcast last night. They win almost all the time when they have a first period win, or first period goal or first period lead. So how they play in the first period in game two, big deal. If they're down 1-0 going into the second period, it is, you know, you are hanging on by a thread at that point. So I think it's fair to reserve judgment till after game two. I think that's the right way to look at the series. I do want to, some of the young players or some of the guys that you thought performed well. I got a couple of names here. I already mentioned, I thought Luke Evangelista, the hockey IQ is on full display at all times. The guy's going to be a nice player for the Preds for a while. And I think he's clearly suited for the moment. It was not too big for him at all. I thought Spencer Stastny played fairly well considering his age and experience level and defense pairing. So I thought that was pretty solid. Here's the guy I think that needs to really kind of, I don't want to say turn it up a notch, but I think you saw some of it in game one, and I think you're going to need it a lot in game two if you want to come back. And that's a pissed off Colton Sissons. You need pissy Sissons to play like that the entire game. There was one shift there where he was you could tell he was getting frustrated, and he's just like, he's like, all right, we're going to go in here and on the forecheck, and we're just going to knock some people around. They need a pissy Sissons in game two for sure. And who do you think is going to be the guy that the Preds fans are just filled with hate at the end of the season? Because I have a guess already. The guy that just pisses them off for Vancouver by the end of the series, you're just like, God, that guy, that mother. Who do you guys think it is?
Mike.
I feel like right now it's Quinn Hughes, because I mean, if you watch some of the interviews with the Preds players, like Vancouver media just could not help but ask them all about freaking Quinn Hughes. You're talking to the Predators and you're like, yeah, what about Quinn Hughes? Like, I'm sure they watch tape on him. They know how good he is. Like, I feel like Nashville is just kind of overhearing about Quinn Hughes.
So go ahead, Emma.
I was going to say maybe, but I would also throw JT Miller in there too.
I think so. Colton Sissons, we've talked about this. Colton Sissons has to be the guy that everyone on the other team knows all about, right? Oh, damn it. I'm like, I got to go up against 10 now. He's going to dig the puck out. He's going to play good defense. He's going to win faceoffs in his own defensive zone. He's going to kill penalties, and he's going to maybe even produce some offense. Like, that's the guy that you're annoyed with if you're a Vancouver fan. I think Dakota Joshua is going to be – people are going to just be like, that guy's got a really punchable face at the end of the series. Like, they're just going to be, like, so annoyed with him because he can score. He's a solid player, but, like, also just has this look on his face like, come get it, asshole. Like, every time they show his face on the screen, I could see Preds fans just like having an emotional response to him. And I guess that's a compliment because it means you're playing pretty good hockey. So that's the guy I think who's got a chance to be. And I mean, because there's always a guy in a series that scores like four goals that's not supposed to, you know? And that's, I could see that guy being the star for Vancouver and everybody just being annoyed with him for the rest. Like Ryan Kessler from 2011, like the Ryan Kessler from 2011 could be Dakota Johnson. So we'll see. Dakota Joshua. I said the wrong name there. All right, lineup changes. Let's not be too dramatic here, but do you expect any in game two?
I would say no, unfortunately, because we know with Andrew Brunette, he is very hesitant to make changes to his lineup if the team is playing well, which they did for the majority of the game. There are some, you know, again, I've made this clear before. It's hard, right? Because again, I mentioned Carrier did not have a good game. Lozon didn't have his best game either. But I think that you need to hang with Vancouver, you need Lozon's size and physicality. So you need him in there. I would love to see Dante Fabbro get in instead of Carrier. I don't think it's going to happen. We all know that I and the resident Tyson Barry stan would love to see him in there too, but I don't think it's going to happen. As far as like, I mean, you were waxing poetic about Evangelista and Stastny. I think Stastny played extremely well too. I mean, he just looks like he's been doing it for years. Yep. And I would throw in there another guy who I think had a really good game last night was Mark Jankowski. I like him up on that line with Zucker and Sissons. And you mentioned a pissy Sissons. We saw a pissy McDonough last night too. Yeah. That's another one that I think you need. I mean, he flips.
Maybe he's upset with himself clearing the puck into the middle of the ice all the time. Maybe that's what he's upset with.
I mean, he should be. I don't know. He just like, you could see the emotion. He's not usually a visibly emotional guy, but he was last night. So, but like he did it in a way that it's not like he was out of control or you know, anything like that. So anyway, that's a tangent, but yeah, I would say I don't foresee any lineup changes just because I know this coach and this team. And I don't think that he's, you know, he's going to look to get into a rhythm, especially after they had 6 days with no games. So I think the way you do that is just put the same guys out there.
Yeah, I mean, Andrew Brunette talked about it, I think, the first media availability when they got to Vancouver about Bolivier and Glass possibly switching out and stuff like that. And he said, no, I think we're gonna come with the guys that got us here. And you look at the forward group, I don't really think anyone was too terrible. Yeah, you need Forsberg to do more than 3 shots on goal. You look at the defensemen, like, yeah, you need Roman Josi to have more than 1 shot on goal. Like, you need your offensive guys. I mean, the top line, they all were -3 last night. you don't really need any changes. You just need, you need your forwards to play the way that they played the last 40 games of the year, basically. I think to Emma's point defensively, God, Lozon and Carrier were just, they were so bad. Yeah, and I wrote in my story for National Hockey Now this morning, like maybe it was just an uncharacteristically bad game for them, but Andrew Burnett doesn't have the luxury to sit there and like kind of wait for them to figure it out. Yeah. I don't think we see any lineup changes for game two. I think if we see a similar game in game two, like game one, or there's some glaring issues like the Lozon Carrier pairing, I think potentially we could see Carrier come out. Maybe you throw Fabro in there. Maybe you throw Barry in there. I don't think we're going to see any changes with Luke Schenn, but I feel like if you want, like, it almost seems like a waste to watch Spencer Stastny play when he's paired with Schenn, because Schenn doesn't really add any value or do anything to make Stastny better. And I don't want to keep crapping on the guy, but I
don't know how this happened. I think Gover has perpetuated this idea, but somehow I became the resident Luke Schenn hater, like on Twitter and on the internet. I'm like, wait a minute.
That's Michael.
I did not start this. Mike started it. I agree with it 100%.
I'm not trying to hate on him. I'm just, you have Spencer Stastny, who's probably the fastest defensive skater in the team. And you have him with Luke Schenn, who's out there skating with cinder blocks on his feet. Like Barry, pair Tyson Barry with Spencer Stastny. They played together the most during the regular season, and they had success as a pairing. And I don't know what Preds Twitter hates on Fabro so much. Well, and I don't understand it, because if you look at the numbers head to head, Fabro has played better this season than Carrier.
So Preston says, if Fabro isn't going to play, what was the point of re-signing him? So
It's for next year.
No, I know that, but
Carrier is probably going to walk in the offseason.
He gone.
Yeah. I mean, if he's going to play
that last night.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not the way you play if you're trying to stick around.
Maybe the price is coming down. No, I think I think this goes back to the conversation about style. And we talked about it on last week's preview episode, where it's like sometimes you get into a series, you have a plan. And I think the right plan you guys laid out, which is we're going to do what we've been doing for the last 3 months, and we're going to try to stick with it, and we're not going to make too many changes just because we face a little adversity. I think if they go and play another sort of, I don't want to say a slow, it's like, it's not a slower version for either team. They still play super fast, but like for two teams that control so much offense, you expect more scoring opportunity, more scoring chances, tons of block shots in game one. Like the game got a little tighter, which is what happens in the postseason. That's how every sport goes. Every game kind of slows down and gets tighter. And if that's the case, do they want to go warp speed? And if you want to go warp speed, you go Tyson Barry over Luke Schenn, right? If you want to go warp, if they lose another game where it's a little bit slower, but Vancouver's just clearly better, like kind of just by 5% or 10%, and they're just sort of like, this is who they are. They're just a little bit better, a little bit deeper, and kind of controlling everything. Instead of going bigger and more physical, maybe they want to go warp speed. And that's the only thing that I could think of from a change standpoint. But I agree. I don't think you do that on the road in game two. At least that's not my prediction. Would I prefer they make a change? Maybe. But I don't think I'm with you guys. I don't think they make any changes. So
I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I know traditionally in the playoffs, when they have made, like, I'll say drastic, but significant roster changes, it usually has been they wait until they come home to do it.
Yep. All right, so I'm not going to ask you guys for predictions or picks in games two, but I do want to, I sort of want to ask your prediction on our show. We'll be live, of course, following game two on Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. again. The question is, what are we talking about? Because I have a feeling watching some of game one, my concern, if I'm going to go super cynical and pessimistic, is that what we saw in game one is kind of what these two teams are, which is the Predators are pretty damn close, pretty good, pretty capable of beating Vancouver, and Vancouver's just a little bit better at everything. And that is the concern for me, is that you see kind of a similar game in game two, fairly well played, fairly close, really dramatic, fun, interesting, good hockey game. Maybe you go 1-for-4 in a power play, which again is 25%, is pretty good, but that Vancouver's just a little bit better at everything. And that would be my concern and sort of my prediction coming out of game two.
Yeah.
I kind of get the feeling that game two will go kind of similar to game one. And then coming into game three, we're talking about, did the Predators peak too early? Did they kind of run out of juice at the end of the year? And this is just a byproduct of wearing themselves out to get to this point.
I don't even know if I'd talk about peaking too early. I think it's just kind of what you said earlier, which is just Vancouver's a better team. And I said this, you know, from the beginning when I was making predictions about the series, like, it's not meant as like an insult to Nashville. I mean, again, Nashville was not supposed to be in this position. Granted, neither was Vancouver, but I think that there's, you know, I think it's a good series. I think it's going to be, you know, like what we predicted, in the sense that it's a tightly, you know, tightly contested, closely matched series. And like you said, the Preds aren't, I mean, notwithstanding the last half of the third period last night, the Predators don't look bad out there, like as a whole. They don't, they're not out there just getting their asses handed to them. I think it's just Vancouver's better. It's they're better at what they do. They have more depth, and that's okay. And, like,
and Demko made some huge saves.
Yes, he did. Yes, he most certainly did. And so I think it's just you need your guys, you know, all of your got your stars to be firing on all cylinders at all times during the playoffs. And the Predators stars were not doing that last night. And again, I'm not going to make any crazy, you know, sweeping observations after game one, but game two, then we'll see.
Yep. I think the young guys acquitted themselves well. We already mentioned Stasny and Evangelista, first playoff games. I think they acquitted themselves well. You know, the power play scored a goal. UC Saros made a couple of plays, but also probably could have made some more. The defense is not as good as Vancouver. The offense slightly not as good as Vancouver, but I thought ultimately a solid and fun, and by the way, just dramatic hockey game. Like, it was just a fun, dramatic hockey game. Again, last 10 minutes, notwithstanding, very frustrating to watch. The inability, I mean, Vancouver, you know, they didn't park the bus, but Vancouver said, you're not getting into the zone in the last 10 minutes, and the Predators really, really didn't. So that would be a concern. Okay, otherwise, look, I think we're in for a dramatic series. I think the Preds can get a win in game two. We'll be back on Wednesday. Make sure you check out Nashville Hockey Now for all of Michael Gallagher's scribings and follow him on twitter.com @mgsports_. Of course, you can get to Emma at the Hockey News and, of course, Emma_Lingen on the twitter.com. Any parting shots? Anything you guys want to add to the conversation? Is that it?
I think we've hit our Luke Shen parting Quinn, shots already.
Luke Quinn Hugh Shen. Okay. All right.
Words are hard, guys, especially when you're up till 2 a.m. writing.
I agree. Thank you guys all for tuning in. And of course, I know you can catch Emma with Jeremy K. Gover on It's All Your Fault a little bit later on this evening. So make sure you check that out as well. Otherwise, we do appreciate all you guys hanging out and signing up and jumping in and sharing the product. But we'll be live again. You can catch us on the podcast feed as well. So other than that, we do appreciate you guys. And we'll talk to you guys after game two, Wednesday morning, right here on the 440 Sports Network. Thanks for listening, everybody.